The most frustrating or demoralizing questions to miss are the ones that you should be getting right, but still mess up. What does it take to get into the residency of your dreams when it seems like all the odds are stacked against you? Welcome to the Road to Residency podcast with your host, John Arshadi. This is the show where we break down inspiring personal journeys of passionate physicians who had the courage and the commitment to take purposeful action to achieve their goals and serve their communities. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Road to Residency podcast. John Arshadi here, and in this episode, I'm going to be talking to you guys about the proper way to tackle USMLE-style questions in order to get your maximum potential score. This is in response to a request I received from a few students who say that sometimes they overanalyze the question and understand the concept being tested, yet they still end up choosing the wrong answer. Other times it happens because they just aren't able to make the necessary connections. After all, the most frustrating or demoralizing questions to miss are the ones that you should be getting right, but still mess up. This is very common among students, and there are several reasons that this can occur. I'll first go over the reasons why this happens and the research to back it up. Then I'll talk about a few anxiety and time savers. And finally, I'll give you a 5-step method on how to approach these vignettes and rock the exams. Hopefully by the end of this, you'll be better equipped to handle these types of questions and you'll be able to boost your score to 250 or more. Look, the USMLE isn't just a knowledge exam. You'll not do well on this exam just by merely accumulating a bunch of knowledge. The USMLE tests the application of that knowledge. It also tests things like your critical thinking, your reasoning skills, your logic and sensible judgment, memory, your reading and comprehension, your endurance, and your performance under pressure. You only have 90 seconds per question. And because there's so much going on in each vignette, a lot of us during the exam suffer from a phenomenon called inattentional blindness. Inattentional blindness is the phenomenon of missing something that's right in front of you because you are so concentrated on something else. The most classic example of inattentional blindness is seen in a multitude of studies done by Christopher Chabri and Daniel Simons, the most popular of which is a 1999 video where two teams are passing a basketball back and forth and you're supposed to count the number of passes. At the end of the video, they ask, "How many passes did you count?" Then they ask you, "But did you see the gorilla?" It sounds ridiculous, right? If there's a gorilla on the screen, of course you're going to see it. But interestingly enough, 50% of people missed the gorilla because their attention was on the number of passes and not on anything else. I highly recommend searching for the video on YouTube if you haven't seen it already. In 2013, Taft and Drew, a researcher at Harvard Medical School, decided to put this theory to the test with a group of 24 credentialed radiologists. He took a picture of a man in a gorilla suit shaking his fist, and he superimposed that picture on a series of chest x-rays. Then he asked the radiologist to review the lungs for cancerous nodules. He wanted to see if they would notice a gorilla the size of a matchbook staring angrily at them from inside the lung fields. But they didn't. 83% of the radiologists missed it. This wasn't because the eyes of the radiologist didn't happen to fall on the large, angry gorilla. Instead, the problem was in the way their brains had framed what they were doing. They were looking for cancer nodules, not gorillas. When you ask someone to perform a challenging task, without realizing it, their attention narrows and blocks out other things. So often, they literally can't even see a huge, hairy, angry gorilla directly in front of them. So what does this have to do with the USMLEs? Everything. You see, most people tackle vignettes in the wrong way. The first thing they do is look at the answer choices to get an idea of what they're looking for. The problem with that is that once you have that idea, your brain goes into autopilot and it already starts looking for what it thinks might be the right answer to a question that you haven't even read yet. Let me tell you about one more study to reiterate my point. A group of test takers were split into two subgroups. Group A was given a series of questions where they had to come up with the answer on their own. Group B was given the same series of questions, but with multiple choice answers to go along with them. Group A scored fairly higher in a shorter amount of time. This was because Group A had no distractions. Here's a little secret. The official psychometric name for what we call an incorrect answer choice is distractor. That tells you all you need to know. There's no better way to camouflage the correct answer, which is staring all test takers right in the face. So in order to not be distracted, the best thing to do is cover up the answer choices when you read the question stem. Predict an answer, and only then drop down and compare it to the answer choices. Pick the answer choice that fits your prediction and then move on. Looking at the distractors will only confuse you and make you second guess yourself. Now, I know some of you are like, John, I have no idea about this question, and I can't come up with a prediction. Or you might be thinking, I just can't bring myself to not look at the other answer choices. The best thing to do in this case is to go down the list and rule out the answer choices one by one. The key to ruling out, though, is to ask yourself, how does this answer choice not fit into the vignette? In other words, how can I prove this answer choice wrong? So many of us subconsciously try to plug our favorite choice into the vignette and find a way to prove it right. But these distractors are designed in a way to seem right on the surface. So if that's what you're looking for, you may easily fall into the trap of picking the second best answer. So in summary, ask yourself, how can I prove an answer choice wrong instead of how can I prove it right? Prediction also helps with time management and cognitive load. If you read the stem and then immediately predict an answer, all you need to do is compare that prediction to the answer choices provided below. If you can't predict an answer or rule out any of the answer choices, you should probably skip the item for now. Don't be afraid to skip questions on the exam. It's better to get a question that you don't know wrong than to get a question that you do know wrong because you ran out of time. Do all the questions that you do know and come back to the ones you don't at the end of the block. As a matter of fact, there are 5 question types that I always skip and come back to later. These are 1, biostats questions. These questions often consume a lot of time with their formulas and calculations. If you're not good at them, skip them. If you are good at them, however, they're easy points. Number 2 is coupled or linked questions. These are usually 2 to 4 questions with a box around them, indicating that they go together. The problem with these questions is that once you answer the first question, you can no longer come back and change it. This can cause a stress response if by the 2nd or 3rd question in the series, you find out you've been answering wrong and now it's too late to go back and change the answer. Just skip the box altogether by clicking on the number of the question directly after the box and then come back to it later. 3 and 4 are combined and are mostly for step 2 and 3, although these questions are slowly creeping up on step 1 as well. These are drug ads and abstracts. These are questions where you have to read an ad or a 1 to 2 page abstract and answer a series of questions on them. They're usually biostats questions, but not always. These blocks will generally have fewer questions to give you more time to do this, but I usually skip it and come back to it at the end. Number 5 is anything that I would rate an X. I'll talk about the question rating scheme in a future episode, but for now, know that X means I have absolutely no idea about this question. Don't think to yourself, I've already invested so much time, let me try to figure this out. Many people do this and end up spending 3 or 4 minutes on a question they'll probably get wrong anyways, eating up the time they could have had for questions that they would have otherwise gotten right. Save yourself the time and anxiety and just skip the question and move on. Come back to it at the end. It's important that you note, by skipping, I don't mean skipping the question altogether and never coming back to it. You want to make sure you have answered every question you can because there are no negative points on this exam. And even if you choose a random answer, you still have a 20% chance of getting it right. A good strategy for this is to choose a random answer and mark the question so that if you run out of time to come back to it, you'll at least have an answer filled in. The only other questions you should have marked are questions you narrowed down to 50-50, and you need a little bit more time to look at it clearly. You can come back to these, but do not under any circumstances make it a habit to mark a question just because you're not sure or don't know the answer. If you notice that you're marking 25% or more of the questions on your practice exams, you're probably not ready for the test. You may pass, but you'll struggle to get a 250 or more. So, what is the best way to tackle USMLE vignettes? It's through question interpretation. Question interpretation is applying your knowledge to understand every sentence in context. Every sentence in a vignette has a purpose, even if it isn't immediately clear to you. It's either there to push you towards the correct answer or to pull you away from it. It's our job to figure out what each sentence means and which direction it is taking us. The examiners are not necessarily trying to trick you. This is just what you have to do in real clinical medicine. You have to sort out the relevant from the irrelevant and try to form a coherent story of what's happening. Here are the steps that you should take. Step 1. Read the last sentence first. You're doing this for two reasons. The first reason is that, not often, but sometimes, they might ask you a question that can be answered irrespective of what happened in the long vignette preceding it. For example, a question might be a standalone question such as, a patient with what EKG finding is most likely to need a pacemaker within the next year? It doesn't matter what was written before that. You just answer the question as it is, so you can skip the big long vignette. This is a big time saver on the test if you do get such a question. The second reason is that you want to make sure you fully understand the question so you know what to scan for while you're reading the vignette. Remember, you must decipher whether a sentence is pushing you toward the correct answer or away from it. It's important to realize that you're not reading the question first in an attempt to just jump straight to the answer choices and pick an answer. You're reading the question first to know what you're looking for. Under no circumstances should you be looking at the answer choices without first interpreting the question and coming up with a prediction. Step 2. Take a top-down approach. After reading the actual question, you want to start from the first sentence and work your way down. Read each sentence carefully and decipher what is its purpose. For each sentence, actually write down your interpretation of what you think it means, not as a standalone sentence, but in context to the information that was already given to you. Remember, we're not looking for buzzwords or key phrases here. We're trying to find the deeper meaning behind the words. You won't have enough time to do this on paper in the actual exam, but if you practice beforehand, you'll be able to do it in your head effortlessly on the day of your test. For example, if the sentence says, the patient is lightheaded, that might not tell you much by itself. But if they say, the patient is lightheaded, after giving you a history of 3 hours of substernal chest pain radiating to the right shoulder, then you have to ask yourself, why would this patient be lightheaded in the presence of an MI? Or rather, what can cause lightheadedness in the presence of an MI? Perhaps after that, they tell you the patient has jugular venous distension and clear lungs. These sentences by themselves can be any number of things, but when put together, demonstrates a right-sided MI. So now that you have a prediction, you can drop down and find the answer choice that fits with right-sided MI. Step 3 is break down the vignettes into 4 key areas of information. The first one is, what's the actual question? Be very clear on the question before you proceed. Number 2 is, who is my patient and what is their chief complaint? Is the patient male or female? Old or young? Are they healthy or do they have comorbidities? Any significant history? What did they come in for? Is it urgent or emergent? Is it acute or chronic? This is the story you want to be building in your head with each sentence. Epidemiology is very important on the USMLE because if they give you a 28-year-old female with a 2-day history of chest pain, they're probably not talking about a myocardial infarction. Number 3 is pay attention to what's normal just as much as what's abnormal. This can be on the physical exam, lab values, imaging, etc. Normal findings can help you rule out answer choices that might otherwise seem attractive if all you're concentrating on is what's abnormal. Remember, inattentional blindness. Lastly, number 4 is your prediction. With all the facts in place and the story you have created, it's time to make a prediction about what's going on. This is easier if you imagine each vignette as a real person standing right in front of you. Your prediction can be as specific as, I think this is a right-sided renal vein thrombosis, or as general as, I think this has something to do with the kidney. But make a prediction. If you still don't know and have to rule out answers, remember to rule out by seeing what does not fit into the picture rather than what does. Note down the mnemonic QCOP. That's Q-C-O-P. This is what you'll revert to rule out answer choices. The Q stands for question. Does this answer choice fit the actual question? For example, if they're asking you for a treatment, you don't want to choose an answer that corresponds with a diagnostic test. C stands for chief complaint. Does the answer choice fit the actual chief complaint? So many times we get to the bottom of the vignette and they've given us so much information that we've forgotten what the patient actually came in for. Go back and check. It's important to remember that sometimes the chief complaint will change within the vignette. They might bring in a patient with a DVT and halfway down the vignette they've treated her and now she's having an adverse reaction to the anticoagulants. The chief complaint you want to answer is now the reaction caused by the medication rather than the DVT itself. O stands for organ system. This may sound silly, but make sure your answer choice matches the organ system that's involved in the pathology described. If you think the problem's in the kidney, don't pick an answer choice that involves the adrenal glands, which sit on top of the kidney and serve a totally different function. And finally, P is your prediction. Make sure the answer you choose fits your prediction. Avoid the temptation of trying to plug in all the other answer choices and distracting yourself. You'll save yourself time and points. And step four is to be a street magician. You know, those guys who seem to know your whole family history and the name of your first love based on just the fact that you're wearing a watch on your left hand, your shirt's tucked in instead of out, and you're wearing the color red. We call them mentalists. They don't really know who you are. They just make some educated guesses based on connections, and they're really good at making these connections. Sometimes you'll come across a question that you have absolutely no clue about. This is normal. But if you can get yourself really good at making connections, you'll be able to reason through the question and get to the right answer, or at least get it down to 50-50. And if you're the type of person that always narrows it down to 50-50 and chooses the wrong answer, on your next practice test, choose the other one, the one that goes against your gut feeling. If you get the answer right, find out where you made the mistake. What trap did you fall for? What did you not see? What was a connection that you missed? And then learn these connections. And finally, step number five is to be comfortable with making mistakes. A lot of times we understand the concepts and know the right answers, but we still end up making silly mistakes. This can happen due to stress, anxiety, or just losing concentration and zoning out. The key is to remember to correct the mistakes when they happen. Don't fight with the question. Learn from it. Two of the most common mistakes we make when doing questions are subconsciously rewriting the question or not seeing the gorilla, and misinterpreting the question or not reading the question properly. As long as you own up to your mistakes and learn from them, you'll be fine. But the more you battle with the question and with yourself, the more you'll make the same mistakes. Build up your endurance over time so that you lose focus less frequently. You should be able to do 3 to 4 blocks of practice questions a day comfortably before taking your exam. If not, how do you expect to stay sharp through 7 or 8 blocks on the day of the exam, depending on which test you're taking? If you follow these 5 steps, I'm confident that you'll have a good strategy for your next test. Try it out on your QBanks and let me know how it went. If you're still having trouble or have any questions or clarifications, reach out to me through the show notes and I'd be happy to help. Here's to your success. If you haven't already, please rate and review the podcast, share it with your friends, and get this message out there, because this is a time where a lot of people are skeptical and they're saying, I'm an older grad, I'm an IMG, I have trouble with the USMLEs, there's no way I can compete, what do I do? Well, we want to show you that there is hope. Actually, right now is the best time to match as an IMG. You know, our match rates have gone up from 48% in 2010 when I graduated medical school to 61% in the 2020 match. That's a significant jump. And as a matter of fact, more than 25% of the US healthcare system is made up of international grads. So know that you can do it. You will do it. Just don't give up. And I hope to see you in the next episode.